Great. Great. Okay. Did we have someone join us while we were messing around with the recording? Did I miss anyone?
I think Joan, do you want to announce yourself again, please?
Oh, yes. This is Joan Staunton with the New York City Carpenters.
Oh, great. Okay. Someone just joined?
Yes. This is Stephanie from King County.
Oh, great. King County. Hoping to renew your relationship with EPA. That's great.
Absolutely.
As I said last week, that was one of our favorite workforce development programs. And then you guys kind of went away for a while, and now you're coming back. It's great.
Change in people that was managing the program before. So
yeah, that happens.
Hi, Buddy Andrade from New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Great. There's another town we've had workforce development programs from New Bedford. Good ones.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we'll get started. There may be other people joining in. These are informal calls, as I said. And today, of course, we've got this due date on 3 weeks from now on the 24th. And we're going to... our normal procedure, which we'll do, is Glo is going to give us some announcements and news from Washington, and we'll go over a few things there. I'd like to open it up if anyone has some questions at this point where they're at in their program, because I know there's been some obscurity in some of the webinars they've had and some conflicting information has been passed out from different people. So anything there we'll talk about. And then I've got some topics I'd like to talk about in terms of things that are going to make your proposal better than everyone else's. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll also wind up with a little bit of questions that may arise during the during this little discussion. So, well, we always start out, of course, we always start out by saying we don't speak for EPA. We work with EPA as a cooperative agreement to help communities decide if we want to start one of these programs. And once they get into the program, we have several things we do when working with them to try to help them along and streamline their program, including a lot of peer-to-peer learning, which Glo will probably talk about in the announcements. So with that, why don't I turn it over to Glo and see what our news from Washington is today.
Well, I talked to headquarters this morning. A lot of you probably realize that the EPA was under a freeze as far as their grants and contracts go for a while. As of now, the freeze has been lifted in the brownfields realm. I take that as it hasn't been lifted for everything, but in the brownfields realm, it has. So if you were planning to submit a proposal, please continue your plans to submit that. Just a reminder that grants.gov is going to be down for maintenance between February 28th through the 21st. So you're going to need to plan accordingly. Mike and I would suggest that you try to get it in before that, if that's possible, but we know that sometimes is not possible. Another reminder from EPA is that they wanted me to mention that this environmental training program is not intended to be a youth employment program. The graduates of the EWDJT programs must be 18 years old at the time of graduation in order to be placed into a brownfields-related job because of the Fair Labor Standards Act that prohibits youth under the age of 18 from being employed in hazardous occupations. And their final reminder was that the deadline for these proposals is February 24th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. That was it from headquarters. From HMTRI, I just wanted to remind everybody that registration is open for the All Grantee Meeting, which is going to be August 9th and 10th in Alexandria, Virginia. It's open to current and past grantees and PLC members. The average attendance at these meetings is between 125 and 125 people, wouldn't you say, Mike? And that includes grantees, prospective grantees, EPA headquarters, all 10 regions, all 10 EPA regions. So this is a really good opportunity for everybody to learn from the grantee mentors nationwide that are currently doing programs or have done them in the past, what works and what doesn't. So if you're planning to apply, or if you apply this during this round and don't get funded, I would strongly encourage you to attend this meeting and network with the grantees that are doing the work. You'd be surprised the amount of stuff that you're going to learn. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that we are in the process of updating the Starter Program section on our Brownfields Toolbox website. We have completely updated and rewritten all of the sections for the Starter Program section. We're working out the bugs and navigation issues, so if you can ignore those for now, I would encourage you to look it up. Topics, we've added new topics that include the application process, funded or not funded, what to do for either one, community, labor market assessments, functional advisory boards, building partnerships, funding sources, recruitment and assessment, everything that you're going to need to address as you develop a program. So the Brownfields Toolbox website is brownfields-toolbox.org. So I would encourage you to check that out too. That's it for me, Mike.
Good. And give everyone your email address.
My email is ghanne@eicc.edu. So if you need any information on any of this, feel free to send me an email.
Good. We will have some other announcements in the post-session notes. We send those out on Friday. If any of you aren't getting post-session notes, we send out the invites on both a listserv, and we have a special list for PLC members. And, of course, all PLC members are going to be invited. They're invited to the annual grantee meeting, even if you don't have a grant or if for some reason you're not funded this year. We strongly encourage that. You could either email GLOW to get on our PLC list to get the notes, or you could go directly to me, and we'll make sure you're on both lists. My email is msenew@aol.com. So if you send, just put me on the list to both of us, we'll make sure you're on both lists. Her listserv is general announcements. It also includes announcements to the PLC, and mine is strictly the post-session notes. So that's why some of you are getting lots of announcements about the PLC. We send them out on both lists. Some of the things I'm going to be talking about, and I'll put all these things in the notes, about a webinar that's occurring on February 28th. It's about leveraging resources for brownfields. While it has more to do with the assessment and cleanup and revolving loan funds, it's good background information for everyone, and different brownfields talk about what they're doing. And these are resources that come from not EPA, but National Park Service, HHS, or even the National Endowment for the Arts. So I'll just put that announcements, how to watch this webinar, and if you're interested, you could tune in on the 28th. Of course, we do these every 2 weeks, so our next little discussion will be on the 15th, just before the next the proposals are due, and we'll be talking about some final tune-up types of things. Another thing I want to just mention that we usually talk about and put in the notes is some of the questions that we've gotten in the last week or two. And, of course, the big one was the question about what's going to happen to EPA, and particularly this program. And it was really encouraging what GLOW said about this particular realm or this area has kind of been taking off that silence list. And, you know, this is a jobs program, and it's about an infrastructure program. So while no one knows what's going to happen in the future, we've got a lot of things going for us. We've got some great staff. These are not the presidential appointees, but these are the career employees that have worked with this program for a long time, are very well aware of the benefits of this program, and are good fighters for the program. So it's really encouraging, and we're thinking real positive. Of course, any of you We also had a question, is we're going to start a new cycle? Are we having problems or should we be concerned? And, of course, if you were funded this last year or any time prior to this fiscal 16, the money, the check's basically written. And so everyone that's on board now is certainly fine through the end of September. The rest depends on Appropriations Committee, so we're thinking very positive that this program will hopefully expand, stay the same, so we'll see. But for now, everyone's good to go. And also, the competition is wide open, and the big fear in EPA is that people might hear this and think that there may be funds or their funds may be cut, and they really encourage everyone to submit their grant. We also encourage everyone to submit their grant, and even if you're not quite sure that your grant is ready to go when the 24th comes, get on the ship, because these are annual cycles. Normally, the next RFP will normally come out in November. They've been delayed this year, came out late, but it's been going on since almost 20 years, 18 years, and never missed a beat, and has been slowly increasing in funding. So almost like clockwork, every November this, we would have these. So in fact, we tell people this is about the time to start working on the next one. As soon as you submit, strengthen your relationships, do your homework, and be ready for the next November, because it does take a long time. Any of you who have written or started writing your RFP can easily say, hey, I'm really underwater here. I can't get this information in time. I would say, one, do the best you can and submit to get into the loop, to get to know your regional coordinator. And then also, don't be afraid of not getting it the first time. Many of our grantees didn't get it the first time. Some the second, some the third. So the fact that it's an annual program works in our favor. I would say normally, and there's no set rule of thumb, they've got $3 million to spend. So that's about 15 grantees at $200,000 apiece. In terms of the number that apply, just to give you a feel for it, I would say it's somewhere around 50 to 60 applicants. It's competitive, but it's not super competitive where you don't have a chance. There were times when there were some special programs and there were lots. We went over 100 on some, but now 50 to 60, and maybe some being discouraged. Actually, it works in all our favors if there are less applicants. So you're talking about 1 in 4. So 1 in 4 is not bad for a government grant. So it's certainly worth going to the next step and putting the effort in. Now, what we're going to talk about, of course, is how do you beat the three other people? And that's what we want to talk about in just a minute. But first, I want to say, does anyone have any questions? They're getting in started. Many of you have been working on this for 6 to 8 months, have been attending the PLCs, and I think you got it pretty well laid out what you're going to be doing. Some of you have done this before, and some of you may be a little queasy and have some questions. Is there anyone out there that might have some questions or clarifications for now?
This is Stephanie. I have a question. As I'm working out my budget with my fiscal team, they talk about leverage funds, and just want to make sure that these are not match funds, and that do we need to show, if we're awarded the grant, do we need to show drawing down these leverage funds as well?
Okay. Let me tell you a little bit about this, and I'm going to make it a little broader, and it's a really good question. We also had a question this morning about partnerships versus contractors and consultants. Whenever no money is exchanged, there's not any regulations, it's not an issue. People, primarily WIBs, Workforce Investment Boards, will support your organization. They'll provide all the soft training. They'll provide a whole, and these are called leverage funds. They'll provide soft training. They'll do life skills, they'll do placement, some recruitment, they'll do a lot. And usually there's no money involved. No, it's just part of, they're getting credit for this, you're getting credit for this, and that's a perfect example of leverage funds, and I'm going to talk more about that in a second. The other type of transaction that occurs is something where money changes hands. And that falls into two categories. One is a partner who is a legal partner, and then there are contractors, consultants, trainers, where funding is going to be exchanged, but they're not a legal partner. Now, the difference, they're all partners. Everyone I just mentioned is a partner. That's kind of an umbrella general term for people that are working with you, our partner. There's a leveraged, and there are leveraged partners who are giving you stuff for free, and then there's partners where there's money being exchanged, and then there's contractors. So that's how you would define all of those. A legal partner is someone that they're written into the grant, and they're actually a partner with you. There will be funding exchanged. They're a nonprofit, for example. There's going to be funding. They may get 25% of the grant, or they're going to get they're going to be a partner, and that's going to be a memorandum of understanding or in a legal thing between you and them, and you're going to be sharing this grant. Those partners have to abide by all the rules and regulations that you do as the grantee. So in other words, if you take a college or another nonprofit as a partner, and they would have to be fit the same criteria, they're nonprofits, they would be written in the grant, and they would be subject to all the federal regulations. They theoretically could be audited. They would have the non-discrimination regulations, all of the things that you, it would just be like your right arm. They're attached to you. That's the legal partner. Then there's these partners who are consultants. They're being paid. They're contractors, consultants. They're going to be often your trainers. They don't have to abide by those. They have basic procurement regulations that they have to apply to, but you're basically hiring them. They're hired help. They are not subject to, they're not like your right arm. And the thing about them, if you're going to include them in the grant, is we really encourage getting them on board now so you could write them into the grant. So in other words, if you're going to hire training consultants, two or three, or even if you're not sure you're going to use them, or a community college, get those in place now so that you could write them into the grant and you could use their experience. For example, you might say, we're going to use XYZ Community College to do our training in hazardous materials, and we're going to use John Doe, this consultant, to do some of these other NIOSH or health and safety training. Those you want to get them on board, and then when you're writing your grant, you could include them as your expertise, and you can kind of claim their experience and what they've done and that you've procured them already. They're already on board. So that would be what they would do. Now, your leverage resources are not anything that you're paying for out of the grant. These are freebies that are paid for everybody. And what you want to do is in your grant, you want to, if they say, we're going to give you this training facility, you wanted that in writing, that they're giving you the training facility. And it's a leveraged opportunity, and you could assign a value to that. You don't draw on it. It's not in your grant, and it's not in your budget. But you put it in there as a leveraged resource you're getting. But you also, on those, particularly the bigger items that you're going to, you know you've got them, you want to get a letter of some sort of letter of support or write a letter that they're committed to provide this to you. It might be a workforce investment board. It might be a bank that's going to teach financial literacy. It might be a consultant that's going to give you training facilities. What you want to do for them is, can you write me a letter that saying you're going to commit yourself or commit these training facilities or this training to us, and then you could put a value on it. You don't draw the funds down. It's not part of your budget. It's not included in your budget. It's just on the side. You definitely want to get the recognition and credit for having them. And if you say that this is a committed leverage resource, it's in your appendix, you're going to want to have that letter of commitment from them so that you'll be recognized. But the direct answer to that question you just asked is, no, it's not part of your budget, and no, you don't draw down any of that. It's the only thing you're doing in your budget and drawdowns is that's just the EPA funding. that you're getting from EPA. Is that long explanation kind of clear?
Yes, I think because my fiscal person was thinking this was, you know, a match because I have staff that would be doing outreach to recruit clients and doing a lot of case management so that they're making sure that the clients are getting to the trainings and making sure they have bus tickets to get there and all of that.
Yeah,
so
excellent. Now, you don't need a match on this grant. You there is no match required. So, but I would count that as a leverage resource.
And
explain what they're going to be doing, but don't put it in the budget. You could, for your internal good, you can. And when, in Acres, later, once you get your grant, they're going to ask what kind of leverage resources. And those are estimates that you're going to assign. So you might say, we're getting $25,000 for these resource people doing these things. But they're really, as far as EPA is concerned, not part of the budgeting process.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions as far as that goes? Okay. A lot of times there are questions about these courses. This is one of the big things in contention in the last PLC about, is my course going to be an allowable course? And of course, we always said to everyone, if it has to do with solid waste and hazardous materials, if your course is part of that training, you're okay. If it's something different, then we start to get in the gray areas. For example, it says in the RFP you can't do construction training. Well, you can't do construction training, but OSHA 10, for example, is health and safety during construction. And you need to have health and safety, how to protect yourself in deconstruction that might be a part of your program. So why you can't teach people how to use hammers and chisels and do lathes, you can include things like this general construction OSHA 10, which is a health and safety oriented course because you need it to do your work. Same with if you're going to be doing paint removal, you might have confined space in there because you're going to be in a confined space, whether you're working with lead or asbestos. So it's really directly involved. So courses, it's kind of pretty much intuitive. If it's financial literacy or something like that, that's not EPA training. But if it has to do with EPA to do that, you're okay. Now, the other thing that gets confusing to people is, okay, I'm going to do EPA, but I'm going to do air programs. No, you can't really, because when you look at that page that talks about who's contributing to the program, most of it's being contributed by hazardous materials and solid waste. A lot of things fit under that. RRMP, the lead removal, the asbestos removal, even forklift as it pertains to moving hazardous materials around, health and safety. But there are some things that are not on there, like air pollution. They don't really contribute anything to this program, and they're not going to really support training programs for air pollution. Things like weatherization, that becomes an issue because that's covered by HUD. They're not really contributing there. So on those, for the most part, it hasn't been an issue. We had some water programs that wanted to teach truly wastewater. The problem with that was that they only had limited funds that were contributed to this program from wastewater. So if your whole program was based on wastewater, it really needed to be funded by the wastewater people. They contributed $40,000 to this, but that's not enough to support all these programs, and it's really not connected to solid waste and hazardous materials. So that's the only caution on that. If you're going to, for most of the things we're doing, you're going to be okay, but just be a little careful when you start talking about if your whole program is going to be based on pest management, you may have some issues here. You could do awareness training, which is a good thing to do, because they only contributed $10,000. But if your whole program was doing pest management people and exterminators, then we're going to run into some issues there. So that was another thing that was confusing people. Okay, well, in the absence of any additional questions, and anyone have any other issues that might be bothering them at this point? Okay. One other thing before we talk about supercharging your proposals, and we started to talk about it earlier with a gentleman who was online from Chicago. If you get into this and you find there's no way I could submit, you might you might look or you email us at some of the other grantees in the area, and you may want to contact them. I would say if you're close to submitting any kind of proposal, submit it and get on the track. And after these, in the first 30 days or so, they'll tell you whether you're eligible to go on. But then they from then on, if you meet all the general criteria, then you go into ranking criteria, and then in about 3 months we find out who gets it and who doesn't. So the trick is to beat three other people out. And now if you answer every question, and you have to answer every question or you won't get funded, and we've always suggested dissect that RFP. Every time there's a question mark or a request for information, put it on a note card, put it on a sheet of paper, and assign it to someone and say, I need you to do this, or I need you to do this. And then we always, there's all kinds of writing techniques. I have one person that's filtering and bringing all this together and finding out where your holes are and where your weaknesses are, what you need to beef up. So that's a good strategy, but you need to answer every question in there. And at this point, you should have or need to dissect everything in there. Now you're going to see all these questions, budgets, and tables you have to fill out, things like that. Some of those are easy. You can get the information without leaving your office. But you have to realize everyone else is going to do the easy things that you're doing. And what we're talking about today is beating out three other guys. How do you do that? Well, you've got to do something more than what they're asking you for. And the question is, well, how do I do that? And most of that is getting out of your office and assigning people to get out of the office and do some things. And I, in the note, in the invites, I talked about three basic things: community relationships, public meetings, employer involvement, and advisory boards. And this all talks about getting out. If we start with community relationships, we always in these PLCs have talked about labor market assessments and community assessments. And that's going to get you a long, long way. And it's just about not looking up demographics and filling out the tables. It's about actually going out and contacting people. You have to decide in your target audience, where's the best chance of people getting jobs? Is there an industrial area nearby? What is going to be the location of your training? If your training facilities are a community college out in the high-end suburbs and your target group is down in the inner city, how the heck are, and this is what the evaluator is going to ask, how the heck are your students going to get out to the suburbs to get their training and then get back home? And it's not that that can't be done. Maybe you've got, and we talked about it earlier, you might have bus passes. You have someone that's working on bus transportation. That is a great time to be talking about target groups. And when someone asks a question that's evaluating proposal, well, how are they going to get to the training facility? What is the transportation going to be? And kudos to the person that asked the question. You've got someone working on transportation. You want to make sure that's in the grant, because the next guy is not going to be talking about it in the grant, and that's going to give you points ahead of him. So these are the things that make the difference between the people who are funded and not. And often it's just a few points and just the little mention that, oh, here's our training facilities, here are where there are a lot of jobs in this areas, and here is where our target group is. And oh, by the way, we've got a person assigned to making sure everyone has transportation services. Bingo. That's exactly what you want to do. So that's part of this whole community assessment, labor market assessment, making sure you put in the extra things that aren't asked for that everyone else is going to be putting in. That kind of morphs into this whole idea of public meetings. It's amazing how few people do this, and this isn't easy. The ones that are, the communities and the grantees who are more government-oriented people, we've got grantees who are WIBs, or they might be in a special department in a government. It's much easier for them. A lot of them have connections to city council, or they know city councilmen, and they'll say, can I mention that we have the intention of applying for an environmental workforce development job training grant, and we just would like to inform you what it's about, see if you could get on the agenda just to have a meeting, document when the meeting was, what you did, city council. we had someone announce it that there is the intentions of submitting for an EPA grant $200,000 in city council. We hope we will get it. If we don't, we're going to continue to work on it. That is worth lots. And you want to make sure, and if you do it, you want to make sure you get credit for it. If you're not into the government, city council, political side of that, you might have a call a meeting at the local library in your target community. Ask the librarian if you could put up a poster that you're going to have a meeting that talks about environmental job training. And when you get some people there, and maybe you won't get many people there, you might get two people there. Talk about what you're planning on doing, what you'd like to do, about the schedule, what your desires are to bring to the community, and document. You don't have to get 1,000 people. You don't have to get 100 people. You can get 5 people.
You
want to document it. And all you want to do is say, we had this public meeting at the library in the target group, which would be better than having it across town. And we explained to the participants what we're doing and put that in the proposal. And that's, again, when everyone else doesn't do that and you do it, it's going to put you way ahead. And all you're doing is describing the program. It's not a slam dunk. You may or may not get it. And all of these things I'm telling you about, always caveat is there's extreme competition. 1 in 4 isn't bad, but there's extreme competition. We may or may not get it. If we don't get it, we're going to try to improve our proposal when it's over, and we're going to try to get it next year. You would be amazed that if you do that around government, you may get money that's not even EPA money. We've had this happen where someone will give you, well, I'm willing to kick in some money for planning purposes. If you don't get it, come back to me. And I'm willing to let go of $10,000 or $20,000, or I might even be an employer, and I'm willing to help you do some planning for next year. This would be awesome. So it's amazing when you get the word around. The biggest issue people have is I don't want to be humiliated. I don't want to line up all these employers. I don't want to make these commitments and then have to go back to them and tell them I didn't get it. You start out by saying this is conditional. We're trying. The competition is steep, but we want to get it. We want to do this, and if we get it, it'll be awesome. If we don't get it, we're going to try to improve it. And that's really, you're going to make more friends that way than anything else. The next thing, if you don't have a library around the target group, go to a church meeting. Go to the pastor, and some churches are much more proactive. Many of them in the target groups are tremendously community-oriented and really interested in jobs. A lot of them have different missions and advocacies. And if you go to a church, it's the same as a public meeting. You want to just offer up, have them announce it. We've got 3 weeks left. You can say on one of the Sundays on Thursday, we're going to have some representatives from so-and-so organization. They're going to want to talk about what they're doing for jobs in our community. And if you're interested, it's at 8 o'clock. If no one shows up, hey, it's okay. You've done it. You've had your public meeting, and you want to document it. Again, it's going to put you way ahead of all the people that aren't listening right now. So that covers the community relationships in your public meetings. The employer involvement is really interesting. You want to look in the phone book and see if you could find anything on organized labor, particularly the manager of the labor union, particularly the ones, Labor's AGC is really a good one. Labor unions are most closely related to environmental restoration. If you could set up a meeting, set up a phone call that you said you talked to them, you definitely want to do that. In terms of employer, did someone want to say something? Oh, okay. In terms of employers, you want to try to identify them. You don't want just statistics about here's what the demand is going to be. You want to see if you can get a contact that's going to attend classes, come to your graduation if the program goes. If you could get them to commit to look at the grantees. This is extremely important. EPA would love to have someone guarantee employment for all your graduates or some of your graduates. In some cases, that's happened where you get a commitment letter. They said, we need people so bad, we will hire 3 people. Ask them to put it in writing and make sure that's in your proposal. if they say, well, we don't know what it's going to be like next year, or we may not be doing any of this, ask them to, can you write us a letter that said you will look at our graduates, make sure that's in the proposal, because that counts a whole lot more than someone who doesn't do that. Ask them if they can be on the advisory board. And what you do is you do this in a graduate. First, you ask them, are you interested? And then you ask them, you know, would you like to talk to our graduates or come to a, if the program goes, would you come to our classes and talk about what you do? Oh, okay, I'll do that. Would you be interested in doing some training? Oh, okay, I'll do that. Would you be interested in looking at our graduates? Start small. Would you be interested in looking at our graduates? Oh, yeah, okay, I certainly would do that. Maybe would you be interested in being on the advisory board? Yeah. Then you could hit for the real letter. Could you write us a letter that you would, we need all, and you explain that we need these, this will help us get the grant. If you could write us a letter that you would commit to looking at our graduates. That's the way you want to go through that. And you got to get this into the grant. You have to remember that the people who are doing this evaluation, they don't know you. They don't know how good you are. They don't know what you're thinking. They don't even know. If it's not written in the grant, it doesn't exist. So you keep that in mind as you start writing these grants. And documentation from outside your program means a heck of a lot more than whatever you say. So again, when we talk about advisory boards, you ask that employer to be on your advisory board. Just like the consultants, the trainers, that I, and the contractors that I talked about earlier, you want to try to get your advisory board together before you write your grant. And again, we're not talking about high-end advisory boards. We're talking about a working advisory board. We're not talking about the mayor and the city council member and the president of XYZ Corporation. We're talking about someone who works for XYZ Corporation that is involved in environmental technology. That's what our advisory boards for this program are about. So you want to get someone who's maybe a consultant who is doing hazardous waste cleanup, and ask them, can you be on our advisory board? And I would ask them all the questions we just talked about in, about employer involvement. The last question, can you be on our advisory board? And if he accepts, you might write him a letter. I don't know, depending on the room you have in your grant, you might suggest we have assembled our advisory boards. These are our members they've accepted to be on and involved. This is what we have them planning on doing. What you want them to be doing is participating in the writing of the grant. You want them to provide input into the grant. You certainly want them on the advisory board once you get going, and to provide you advice and consent on your curriculum. So you want to get them really now. We've been talking about this over the last 6 months. You really want to get them on board now. Not just employers, but we're also talking about community leaders that may know nothing about environmental training or environmental remediation. You want that person that you went to at the church to set up a meeting for you. Can you be on our advisory board? Ideally, if you can get a government representative, someone in, ideally on the WIB, the Workforce Investment Board, certainly anyone who's giving you leveraging funds, you want to ask them, can you be on our advisory board? So you're asking them a couple things. One, can you commit to providing us some leverage funding? Two, can you be on our advisory board? Ideally, someone's in the mayor's office that might be able to guide you through possible leverage funds at a later date, someone who's in the know politically. So you probably would want to get one of your trainers to be on the advisory board to help you work with curriculum and guide you through curriculum. So if you can do all these things, and again, we're at this point, we're at 3 weeks. I've mentioned a whole lot of things, but if you do any one of these things, and if you do them all, you're going to be doing things that those other three proposals may not be doing. And that's the key. The key is scoring more points on the evaluation criteria, and the reviewers are going to be looking for something more than the standard. You have to remember they're going through 50, 60 of these things, and there a lot of them are going to look the same until they hit yours, which is going to say, oh, he's already done this. He had a public meeting. He's got an advisory board in place. He's got his trainers in place, and he's got all their experience in there. So that's going to jumpstart you, supercharge, as I said, your proposal that the other people didn't have. So at this point, you know, we're starting to move into the panic phase, but I think some of these things you can do. If you can't do them all, you can certainly do some of them. That's really going to help your grant from where you're at now. So I'd go that route. Anything come to anyone's mind at this point, where they're at? I certainly would encourage, again, as GLOW encouraged, submit no matter what, and look at this as a dynamic process. Even if you can't do all the things that some of these other people can do, definitely put it in there. Definitely look at special situations. You know, you may be in a enterprise zone. You got to make sure that's where the city hall connections come in. When you're talking to them, they're going to tell you, oh, you know, we have this enterprise zone or we have this special zone. Are you aware that your target group is in a special zone? And that drops you into a whole other category of special situations that your proposal will have that someone else won't have. So that's also very important. So, well, I've gone over our time, but next time we're going to do some quick last minute. It'll just be a few days before the grant is due, but we'll just kind of go through a checklist just to make sure that you've hit some of these points and try to answer last minute questions. In the meantime, if any of you do have questions, contact me or GLOW or your regional coordinator, and one of us or all of us will have answers for you, hopefully. Anything else? GLOW, anything else that you'd like to talk about this week?
Yeah, not that I can think of. Like, check out the toolbox. Don't forget about the maintenance time for grants.gov. And, yeah, just work on your proposals and contact us if you think we can help in any way at all.
Good. Join us on the 15th, same time, same place. Well, thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
visit this week.
The president suggested at first one sitter at about 9:24 a.m. that day.
It's one of our closest allies, our immediate neighbor to the south, and they have a meeting scheduled for Tuesday. You don't think that's a good thing?
It's a great thing that they spoke for an hour.
Visit this week.
The president suggested at first one sitter at about 9:24 a.m. that day.
One of our closest allies, our immediate neighbor to the south, and they have a meeting scheduled for Tuesday. You think that's a good thing?
It's a great thing that they spoke for an hour.
I just wanted to check if you got George Shuck's email.
No.
Okay, he said it went forward. I could forward it.
Oh.
He said something about it rejected. Something rejected. So I'll
send it. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, okay. I'll send it.
Anyway, so did he...
Yes, Jamar Morales was there, and he passed. So 8 passed. He didn't give the score, but he just said passing people, and then 3 fails. For Bueno, Sanchez, and... And Simon, Freddie Simon.
I think it was Freddie had the pretty low score. We were like giving him a chance.
Yeah.
But Brian Sanchez,
I thought
he go to college.
I don't remember correctly.
I think he's one of the ones.
He's
like
see somebody who
what
he
the
was.
Fuck?
Exactly. Who was? Oh, Buena. Well, Buena.
Aw.
Yeah, I'll forward it to you. But yeah.
Okay. Okay. So then what? Oh, we'll forward it to me.
I'll afford it to you, and I don't know what. I just said, I will do. Thank you very much. And I was going to ask if there's anything else you need, but I didn't. So I'll just forward it to you and wonder why it didn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
get them all confused because I think they're all the cousins.
Yes.
And Freddie.
Right, Freddie Simon, yes.
And these two got,
Yeah,
I thought that Brian was good. Like, one of them,
he was really bright.
He was like,
he was really,
you know.
Definitely. All right. And I was so happy to see Jay Martin, so I don't know why we can't reach him.
Oh.
I forwarded it resident.
Okay.
That was missing.
All right.
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
Body of the email in a new email.
Oh, what is this? I'm getting this little, what is this? That's this thing. I have like this little triangle.
Oh.
All right.
Oh, maybe
I'm just going to close it.
Okay.
And open it up again.
Okay. Yeah, but like a And flex the emails. And that, the last thing I have to print it out for you.
Let me change my email.
Okay.
I wonder if that has anything to do with it.